You are listening to Kubernetes Bytes, a podcast bringing you the latest from the world of cloud-native data management. My name is Ryan Wallner, and I'm joined by Bhavin Shah, coming to you from Boston, Massachusetts. We'll be sharing our thoughts on recent cloud-native news and talking to industry experts about their experiences and challenges managing the wealth of data in today's cloud-native ecosystem. Hello, it's Ryan and Bhavin. This is going to be part two of our Live from KubeCon episodes. If you did not get to listen to part one, it is the previous episode where we listened and heard from Peter, Gabriel, Tim, and Steven. So go ahead and check that out if you're interested to see what's going on in the sort of Percona, EDB, Dell, and Akamai space. And this episode will be from four more. Why don't you give us a little sneak peek, Bhavin, of who's coming up?
Yeah, so in this part two, we'll talk to Brad from Redis. We'll talk to Ben Aaron from Teleport, talking about security. We'll talk to Scott Lowe from Plume, and then Sean from Instruct to talk about how people can get started with their Kubernetes journey. So exciting second part coming up.
Absolutely. All right, well, we won't keep you any longer. Enjoy. Brad, welcome to Kubernetes Bytes live here at Detroit. Thanks for joining us for a little bit of time here. How's it going? Introduce yourself.
Yeah, I'm Brad Asker. I'm Principal Product Manager for Redis for their Kubernetes ecosystem. So all things Kubernetes and containers and cloud native.
Awesome. So how's the show for you so far? I know it's Thursday today. We're deep into KubeCon at this point. How's the show been?
The show's been great. I think a lot of particular themes are coming out. Multi-cluster is a very big thing. Security and build pipeline and build security. And a good bit of stuff on databases. So more people showing up in the database space.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I think, like Brad, we had you on to talk about Redis on Kubernetes a while back.
Yep.
So what do you have new for us? Like, what can we talk about?
Yeah. So then we talked about a little bit longer range. So now we're announcing that our Redis on Flash feature, which is the ability to have just some of it in memory, because we're an in-memory database.
Yep.
But we can also do it on disk. So when you have terabytes and terabytes, that's cost prohibitive to do all of that in memory, right? And so we've had the capability within the Redis product, but inside of Kubernetes, we hadn't exposed that capability.
Okay.
So now inside of Kubernetes, you'll be able to do and expose that functionality and do it in the exact same way that you would if you're on VMware.
Okay, that's awesome. So still using the operator, maybe different?
Yeah, you're still using the operator, and it takes and does a lot of the sequencing of it. And it's actually going to be one of the easiest places to run Redis on Flash, because we take care of a lot of the stuff that you would have to manually do otherwise.
Gotcha. And is this a feature that was announced this week? Do we have any customers already using this?
So we've got beta customers that are using it, and customers have used Redis on Flash.
Oh,
It's like 4-year technology, right? So it's not like new. It was just exposing inside of Kubernetes. So that's what's happening this week. The other thing we've got is a private preview of a new technology. We've always been able to do what we call active-active. Active is geo-replicated databases, right, for spanning longer distance, conflict-free replication technology.
Yep.
We're announcing a private preview on that. And the cool thing is that inside of Kubernetes, you'll actually be able to describe it in YAML files on both clusters, and then tell it, I want to create a database that does this. And under the covers, it does all the work for you. The Kubernetes clusters don't have to talk to each other, just the databases.
Oh, wow.
And then it generates all the objects so that you can still manage it in a declarative YAML kind of way.
Right.
And so when we're done doing that, there's going to be a new controller, right? So our product is an operator and three controllers right now. Add another controller for that. And then it'll be the easiest place. A couple of YAML files, and the extension is literally like 4 lines in one YAML file and 3 in another. And now you've got a database that can span geographies, and it does it all and wires it all up for you.
I like that. And those YAML files that you're managing in each cluster, are you pretty much just any of these to an operator that's running in each cluster as well?
Yeah, and that's exactly how it how it is. The databases have to talk to each other, and the databases have to have credentials to talk to each other.
Right, right.
But the way we did it is the Kubernetes clusters don't have to talk to each other, just the Redis databases under the covers.
No, I think that's helpful, right? Like you don't want to expose your API server on any public facing things.
Exactly.
Okay. So what about distributions under the covers? Like do I need to have the same Kubernetes distribution on both sides?
Nope. All you need is Redis. In fact, in some cases, you can have a slightly mismatched versions of Redis as long as you're not using new features of the highest version.
Okay. This private preview sounds amazing.
It does sound amazing. And so does this replication also support the Redis on Flash capability as well? So if you're running that, you could do the same
thing?
That
is something that we do not have in conjunction. Right. Yep. It's a lot of moving parts.
I imagine it's a lot of moving parts. But that's good. So we'll change gears a little bit here and talk about what you've thought about sort of KubeCon and Detroit. I heard earlier you were from the area. So, you know, what's your favorite part about this area and Detroit so far?
Yeah, so growing up, we would come over to Detroit. I'm a little bit older than most of the attendees here. So I kind of remember some of the heydays of Detroit and then some of the decline. And then it's really great seeing kind of the revitalization of the downtown area.
I think so too,
And, you know, so a lot of really good stuff going on here. And so, and it's just nice to come back. I actually had a chance to go over and see my mom.
Nice.
As I flew in, and she's in, you know, in an area about 2 hours away from here. So combine a little work and personal.
That's awesome. I know. My hotel's out in Dearborn, and we take Washington Ave in every day. And what Ford is doing with the old train station, that is a beautiful area. And you could tell there's just so much money coming in, a lot of new buildings, like construction everywhere. So it's been eye-opening. I've only been here a couple times, but I feel like it's changed every time I've been here. So.
Yeah, my brother's in tech, and he moved north of Detroit about a year ago, and he's really enjoying the area as well.
Okay. So I didn't know that you were a native to the area. I took Ryan's suggestion yesterday and went to Buddy's for some Detroit style pizza. Is that was that a good decision, or do you have some other recommendations?
No, I like Detroit style pizza. I like pizza from everywhere.
Everywhere. Okay. Everywhere. You're just a pizza everywhere
pizza guy.
If
the place has got a local thing, that's the thing I get.
Yeah. Buddy's was a good decision. Well, Brad, I appreciate you stopping by, and hopefully you enjoy the rest of the conference, and we'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure.
Yeah, enjoy the conference.
Yeah. Thanks Brad.
All right, Ben, thanks for joining us at Kubernetes Bytes and taking the time for us. Why don't you introduce yourself for everybody?
Yeah, my name is Ben Arendt. I'm a developer relations manager at Teleport.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, so it's day three now here at KubeCon, and I don't know when you got in. I got in Sunday night with Bhavan, so I've been here. It feels like a full week already. How's the show going for you?
Yeah, the show's going great. I've been primarily helping out at the booth.
Nice.
And it's been great to meet a whole bunch of our customers and also sort of teach people more about Teleport.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's Teleport doing here? What's new? What's going on? What is everybody interested at Teleport?
Yeah, Teleport has been a long time supporter of the CNCF. I believe it's like a CNCF project.
Sure.
And we're an open core product.
Okay.
So majority of our development happens in the open. It's available on GitHub.
Yeah.
It's GitHub Gravitational Teleport.
Okay.
And probably ever since it started, maybe like at least 5 years, we've supported Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. It started off with SSH and Kubernetes access.
Yeah.
And over those years and the versions of Kubernetes, the product just keeps getting better. And so it's great to also like see some of our customers here who are having Teleport and like tens of thousands of Kubernetes clusters as well.
Got it. So I know you've probably been doing a lot of this at the booth already, but maybe give the elevator pitch of what Teleport is and how you use it.
Yeah, Teleport provides identity native access to infrastructure. And there's like a lot of words in there.
Yeah. yep. Break them down.
So what we say by identity native is we tie every connection to access back to the individual identity.
Yeah.
And so, you know that it's me accessing this group system masters, know that I'm accessing like this Ubuntu user.
Yep.
And in the background, it all uses short-lived certificates for access.
Yeah. Okay.
And so it's very secure. And I think one of my pitch here, since KubeCon is full of practitioners, as I say, it's really liked and enjoyed by the developers and the engineers.
Right.
Often you get these tools, which there's always a tension between like security and development.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And we sort of bridge that gap. So it's really nice UX for developers. And the security team is really happy because we have all this sort of best in class security features as well.
Right.
So how does it work with something like, I know pod security policy isn't a thing, but how does it work with native Kubernetes security constructs, and how does Teleport add on to that?
Yeah, so the way in which it works is you map your users to roles, groups, and permissions within Kubernetes clusters.
Yep.
And so if you, one primitive that we have inside Teleport is the concept of labels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So when you add Kubernetes clusters to Teleport, you add labels, and then we have like role-based access control based upon labels.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So that just gives, you know, access or deny or for that cluster. Then you go into where, how do you map? So the worst case example is like you map to system masters.
Yep.
So you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
So what you do is actually walking through a potential prospect earlier today of they have like 300 engineers.
Okay.
And when there's 300 engineers, they use often, you use like LDAP, so they use like Active Directory.
Right. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And in the Active Directory, they have different groups, different permissions, which goes across everything. So you can pull in those groups and then you map them to sort of roles within your Kubernetes cluster.
Mm-hmm.
And so often you'd have like the, like the SRE team might have one user which you've predefined within your Kubernetes cluster. So you set that up once, and then like the 30 people in the SRE team, yep, can use that. And then when it goes back to identity, you can say that person was the person who accessed that cluster and that pod. And we control, we have an audit log of the commands. And then we even have like a session recording. It's like Netflix for your like kubectl execs.
Oh, nice. I like that.
Does it also give you recommendations? Sorry.
Yeah, I know that. I feel like the UX and that experience is definitely something that's so important now that where we are with the Kubernetes ecosystem. I was having a conversation earlier today with a couple of people, and they're like, oh, there's a lot of security people here. A lot of, mm-hmm, I'm like, that makes a lot of sense though, right? Given where I think we've come in the last 5-6 years with Kubernetes, you know, we've adopted it. Now it's de facto. Now everybody says, well, now how do I do this securely? How do I do it with good UX? And I feel like Teleport does look of both of those, you know, given what you were talking about.
Yeah. 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 I think in an ideal utopia world, everything's like GitOps. You write your push to code, it just deploys as automation. Like you never touch infrastructure.
Yeah.
That's not really true. Everyone eventually has to touch infrastructure at some point.
Yeah.
And so when people do touch infrastructure, you know, you just want to go onto a pod and pull logs. You want to know, okay, who was doing what actions. And I think this is also a good time to go back and be like, oh, let's read the session recording, see what you did. Now we can make it like an automated tool. Maybe we could sort of fine tune that and remove that manual process.
Right. So I do want to clarify one thing because I'm not actually that familiar with Teleport. So, you know, what's the benefit of bringing something like Teleport in over the sort of traditional way that you go and set up users or service accounts in Kubernetes today?
Yeah, I think there's two parts to that question. One is just the amount of users that you have.
Okay.
So if you have a, you know, an organization of 50 mm-hmm. to 100 or 1,000 developers, it quickly becomes like unwieldy.
Sure.
and you end up basically recreating, you know, like LDAP internally, which is never good. And then you have like two places to do it.
Yeah.
So it's good to have one extra external source. The other part of it is if you're adding, you know, like 10, oh, actually we've talked to lots of people here. So lots of retail will have a large department store, uh-huh, and each store has a Kubernetes cluster.
Okay.
And if you're a popular hardware store, you might have thousands of stores.
Yep. Yep.
And
yep,
how do they get access to those thousands of stores? So it becomes like a administrative overhead, paying for like all those things. So it's nice to have one consolidated place for access, because if you don't consolidate it and there's pieces, there's always going to be sort of like attack factors into your infrastructure.
Absolutely.
So is there a way, like, this sounds like Teleport does support multi-cluster.
Yeah.
So if I add a new cluster, do I inherit every policy that has been set for on all other clusters, or this is something that, okay, I can select the subset of policies or roles, users that I want to give access to the new cluster?
Yes, we have two Helm charts, mm-hmm, one which is a kube agent, and that, mm-hmm, sort of like dials back. Once you deploy that kube agent, that Kubernetes cluster get registered in a root cluster.
Okay.
And we support like thousands of sort of
agents,
clusters, agents back. And then that's when you use labeling.
Okay.
But then you can just use sort of labeling in combination with your Kubernetes groups and users to sort of scale that sort of like infrastructure access.
Okay.
Makes sense.
All right, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about what you've been up to here in Detroit. I know there's been a lot of events at night. I don't know when you got in, but have you eaten something you've really enjoyed or visited anywhere in the city that, you know, have you been here before? Give it a little.
It's my first time in Detroit.
Okay.
I actually came in from Florida from vacation.
Okay.
So it was like, I came in my beach shorts and a hat. And then it suddenly felt very autumnal.
Yeah.
There's like some ginkgo trees near my hotel. Yeah. It's like a beautiful, like, and I was like, wow, this is like pretty beautiful. Like the architecture is super cool here.
Yeah, it is. You're right.
And near my hotel, there's a really good cafe, and I had a Mediterranean bagel.
Okay.
Which is made there.
What is a Mediterranean bagel? I really don't know.
It had like just some cool Mediterranean spices in it.
Okay.
It's very tasty. It was called, I think it was like John or James Oliver.
All right.
Which kind of thinking of like, Jamie Oliver is like a UK chef.
So right.
I was like, oh, not unrelated, but it's very good. Worth checking out.
Got it. Awesome. Well, you know, we'd love to have you back on the show for a full episode. I think that'd be really fun, but thanks for stopping by and spending a little time with us here at the show.
Okay. Great. Thanks for having me.
Sean, welcome to Kubernetes Bytes live at Detroit. Thanks for taking some time with us. Introduce yourself and what are you up to?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My name is Sean Carolyn, and I'm the head of pre-sales at Instruct, a virtual labs platform.
Awesome. So give the listeners a little bit of rundown of what Instruct is all about.
Sure. Instruct is a browser-based labs platform that you can use for demos, workshops, test drives, pretty much anything where you need temporary infrastructure to run things on.
Cool. What makes Instruct different? Like, what are you doing that's maybe new to those at KubeCon? What are you talking about at your booth? Anything there?
I think one of the things that makes Instruct unique is the fact that we use real infrastructure inside the labs. So, you know, if I need a Kubernetes cluster, I can get everything from a small K3S instance all the way through, you know, your large GKE, AKS, EKS clusters.
Yeah, absolutely.
So are these labs available for anyone to use on your website, or do you help other vendors showcase their products using these labs?
Yeah, we have some of those. So we have plenty of demo tracks, sample tracks people can use for free.
Okay.
And then our customers also publish, many of them publish tracks that you can use for free as well. So you could take a Kubernetes course, for example, using our platform, and the vendor kind of sponsors it for us.
Nice.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. I think, I was working the Portworks booth this week, right? I did have a few conversations where even though they were at KubeCon, people were still in that training phase or learning more about Kubernetes. I had a discussion where the person didn't know much about storage. They're like, I'm still at the point where I think etcd is the place where everything is stored as like, okay that's metadata. So I think for people like that, something like Instruct is really cool, as they can get their hands dirty without even having to spin up a cloud account or spin up a Kubernetes cluster on their own.
Yeah, it really starts to feel like we're entering the early adopters phase, you know, the tech adoption curve. A few years ago, it was the innovators and then the early adopters. Now the early majority is starting to come in, you know. And yeah, I can tell because you see a lot of laptops with few or no stickers on them, right? You're like, oh, you're new, right?
Maybe it's a new laptop.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could have just had a tech refresh.
I think now I know why Ryan has been capturing all different stickers and putting it on his laptop.
I got a brand new laptop to fill.
Your cred is at stake here.
Exactly. So, you know, maybe those listening that are part of this community, they're used to going to the Kubernetes docs. And I know if you peruse the Kubernetes docs, you see like, try this out, right? And I think there's sort of a platform there called Killer Coda or something they've been using. How is it sort of different? How is it, you know, similar? What makes Instruct unique?
Yeah, Killer Coda is a descendant of a product called Katacoda, familiar with. So it's backwards compatible with Katacoda. Those tracks are a little bit more lightweight than what you get with Instruct. So a little more limited in functionality, but it's also a nice, fast, easy way to get your hands on with the tool, which, you know, we love.
Yeah, absolutely. So if I had sort of a, you know, if my developers say had a full blown AWS environment or something like that, and they're used to using those tools, can they bring that to Instruct to use or get that experience of Kubernetes on a cloud?
Absolutely. Yeah. In most cases you can. If you have any kind of automation code, like a Helm chart or some Terraform or Ansible, it's helpful. But we provide these temporary AWS accounts where you can run anything, including an EKS cluster. So it just takes the little bit of automation to kind of stand up what you want to run, and then you can use it as just as you would with your own account.
Yeah. What level of automation or tooling do you use to for that?
Most folks will pick a tool like Terraform. We support CloudFormation as well for the AWS native folks. But even, you know, for simple use cases, you can use something like just the AWS command line.
Right. Okay.
And so a simple script with a few AWS commands in it can be enough to stand up a VM and get you going.
So they actually can manage that script and can kind of control what those environments look like.
Yeah, everything in Instruct is infrastructure as code.
Okay.
So it basically boils down to your YAML, Markdown, and some scripting.
Awesome. So let's switch gears a little bit. I like to give a little bit a taste of Detroit. I don't know how long you've been here. I know Bob and I have been here since Sunday. So I feel like it's been a full week and a half already, given how much time we're awake these days.
Yeah.
But have you eaten something? Have you gone somewhere in Detroit that's really kind of sparked your interest at all?
Yeah. So before I came, I set a goal for myself, and that was to find the Detroit style pizza.
Okay.
I'm a big pizza fan. And did my research and found a place called Buddy's.
Oh, yeah. That's where I was last night.
Okay. So you've experienced Buddy's. Amazing Detroit-style pizza. If you haven't had it, it's cooked in a rectangular tray.
Yeah.
And kind of a thicker crust than your traditional, Italian pizza. I'm a fan of all types of pizza. So Buddy's is definitely should be on your wish list.
Yeah. I wonder how many people from KubeCon rolled through Buddy's this week.
Yeah.
I was there.
Right of passage.
It was packed pretty much with KubeCon people.
And where are you from? Amsterdam, right?
Our headquarters is in Amsterdam.
You're not. Okay.
I'm based in the U.S. I live in Austin, Austin, Texas.
Okay.
I was the first U.S.-based employee of Instruct. Now I think we're up to 9.
Got it. So the pizza in Texas is rough, I imagine.
It's different. Yeah.
It's different.
Yeah. No, there are some spots, I feel you can find good pizza anywhere in the world if you look hard enough. But
I'm from New York. I can't agree with that comment.
Yeah. Yeah, the New York style pizza, a big floppy slice. I mean, there's nothing quite like it. Right?
Exactly.
You have to fold it too to eat it correctly.
Yeah. It's New York pizza or go home pretty much for me.
Okay.
I mean, the North End in Boston's all right, but we make do.
Okay, well, I have a question for you then. Feelings on pineapple?
Oh, it's terrible. Don't do it.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm broke.
You didn't grow up in Europe.
Yeah.
The thing about this question is there's no in between.
One spectrum or the other.
Yes.
Cool. So, obviously we'd love to have you back on the show for a full episode, but where can, folks find more? Where do they go to either get a hold of you or learn more about Instruct?
Yeah, just start with instruct.com. There's a button that says test drive. So you can even try the product without talking to a salesperson.
Okay.
If you do like humans, you can reach out to me as well.
Awesome. Well, thanks for taking the time here at KubeCon Detroit. Appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Scott, thanks for coming to Kubernetes Bytes over here in this little nook and cranny of KubeCon Detroit. I appreciate you coming. Give yourself an intro and tell everybody what you're about.
Yeah, sure. So my name is Scott Lowe. And I currently work for Pulumi Corporation. I'm on the developer relations team, in DevRel. But a lot of folks know me from previous gigs at Nicira, VMware, Heptio, VMware, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Books, my own podcast with Packet Pushers, the Full Stack Journey podcast, that sort of thing.
So, I think I have some memories of my SDN days working when I was way back at EMC and like 10 years ago, evaluating Big Switch and Nicira. And I'm pretty sure we had crossed paths back then at some point.
I'm fully sure that we did. Absolutely.
Nice. So I think I've followed Scott. And again, you were on the podcast before when we spoke about Cluster API. One thing I've noticed you do at these kind of trade shows is live tweet the keynote. Or live blog the keynote, actually?
I used to live blog and live tweet.
Yeah.
But I think my typing is getting slower, so I can't keep up with both of them. Either that or the presenters are going faster. I'm not sure which. I like live blogging because it's a little more permanent.
Yep.
And easier to go back and reference later. Mm-hmm. But it's easier at times just to live tweet. So I wanted to get some sort of information out for folks who couldn't make it.
Yeah.
I know there are a lot of people who could not make it to the show for a variety of reasons. And so I figured at least sending out some tweets about the keynote and then a couple of the sessions I was in to share, you know, information with folks would be useful.
What were the couple of highlights that you would like to share from the keynote, like day one or day two?
I don't want to say I was caught off guard, but I was a little it was a little unexpected for the day one keynote to focus so much on what felt like convincing the maintainers that CNCF had their backs.
Interesting.
You know, Priyanka was up there and talked, you know, multiple times, like, maintainers, we're here for you. Maintainers, we've got you, you know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, right? And anytime there's an open source project of this size, we've seen it before, you know, it's challenging to maintain excitement in the industry and excitement in the contributor maintainer community.
Yep.
And you need an ongoing, diverse set of contributors and maintainers. And there's some burnout that happens,
you know,
in large projects. So I think they may have been trying to address some of that. I don't have an inside track, so I don't know. But it's something that jumped out at me out of the day one. The day two keynotes, which happened this morning, nothing really surprising or unusual out of that. But I do find it interesting how CNCF, you know, feels like it's necessary to provide these project updates. That is like somebody standing up there and just going flat out for like 10 minutes. And we did this and we did this and we did this and we did this, you know? And so, I mean, I get it. You want to make sure that attendees know that projects are growing and that kind of thing.
Right.
I don't know if there's a better way of doing that or not, but I felt bad for folks who had to sit up there and talk for 10 minutes nonstop about, you know, project updates.
I know it's difficult to retain as well, all of that information.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure,
maybe I can just look at a slide later on or a Twitter and blog.
Something. Yeah. I mean, you know, but either way, I do appreciate the hard work by the volunteers who get up and present. So, you know, not trying to dump on them at all.
Oh, yeah. Just,
you know, it was a lot of information all at once, you know, on those project updates. Yeah. So
well, this is actually enlightening for me because I didn't go to either keynote.
Yeah.
So thank you, gotcha. I guess.
No, quite all right. Happy to help. So
that's great. So you did tweet some of the keynote out and everything like that this week then.
Yes. I did tweet from a portion of yesterday's keynote. I had to step out early for a meeting. My day job has me doing some press and analyst meetings.
Yeah.
And then I tweeted the keynote from this morning. And then I also shared some information from an interesting session on chaos engineering that was shared by Goldman Sachs, which I thought, and I shared this in my tweet stream, it was a very informative, very down to earth, practical, useful session.
Okay.
It was one of the sessions that, as a practitioner, if you're thinking about, like, I want to go into a session and I want to get real world information from somebody who's been there.
Yeah.
This is exactly what it was.
That's nice.
I mean, and you know, very, very just on point. So huge shout out to the presenter and Goldman Sachs for that presentation. I thought it was very well done.
Awesome. But, where do people find you on Twitter?
Interested. If you want to get inundated with tweets, then follow me at @Scott_Lowe.
Awesome.
On Twitter. So, yeah.
Awesome. And I think last time when you were here, we just spoke about Cluster API. Now that you work at Pulumi and in the DevRel team, can you share what was announced this week? Just a quick highlights.
Sure. Yeah. So we announced this week, as you would expect, some Kubernetes focused things, right?
Yep.
So we announced a new version of our Kubernetes operator. And the Kubernetes operator is really cool because what it allows you to do is to take Pulumi programs. And for those of you that aren't familiar with Pulumi, the idea here is that we're doing infrastructure as code, but we're allowing you to do that in any general purpose programming language. So you don't have to learn a, you know, tool specific DSL.
Mm-hmm.
But the operator allows you to take any Pulumi program and define that as a custom resource in Kubernetes, and then have the operator continuously reconcile that resource.
Cool.
So then go and manage infrastructure as code via Pulumi from within Kubernetes.
Very nice.
Which is super cool. And so we added some improvements in the operator itself, but one of the other big things was integration with Flux.
Okay.
Which is, of course, the super popular GitOps platform, which allows us to tap into Flux's sources functionality, like where it can source stuff from in our operator. And also we can, we even have a provider for Flux, which means we can provision and configure Flux via Pulumi.
Very cool.
As well as use Flux to run Pulumi to do other things. So it's a little bit of Inception kind of stuff there. Anyway, so those were the focus of the, the announcements this week, Kubernetes stuff. And then we have some interesting stuff that we'll be announcing soon as well.
Great. So, I think, you know, thinking back to the keynote number one and we have your backs, I'm wondering, because I can't help but think back to my OpenStack days.
Yeah.
Of, is this PTSD from the OpenStack project?
You know, I have asked myself that same thing. And there are reasons why you could make that comparison. And there are also reasons why you could not or should not. Right?
Yeah, right.
Like, I think one of the things, and I've called this out before, one of the things I think the Kubernetes community has done really, really well is actually focus on solving problems within the project itself. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. A great example of this is the work that happened with KubeADM and then later with Cluster API,
right,
in
mm-hmm.
terms of making cluster setup not as much of a chore.
Yep.
Right. Mm-hmm. And in OpenStack, that was always left for the vendors. Like OpenStack was we're going to build this and somebody else will make it easy to install.
Right.
And instead Kubernetes is like, no, nobody else can make it easy to install. We're going to make it easy to install.
Right.
Right. We're going to simplify it and we're going to write the best practices for it, which I think is a huge improvement. But where I think you can make a comparison is just, this is a massive open source project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they shared numbers about numbers of maintainers and numbers of contributors and all of that in the keynote. And I don't remember any of them, but that's okay. But the fact is, like, it's a massive project. It takes lots of people with lots of effort to maintain. And I think that was also true too with OpenStack. And yeah, I think there is the risk of some, you know, maintainer contributor fatigue. Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, as we follow the hype cycle for technology where people begin to, you know, they're not as excited, quote unquote, excited about Kubernetes. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's still a critical, important thing moving forward, but they're just not, it's not the new cool thing, right?
Yeah. Yep.
When it becomes quote unquote boring, then I think people lose interest and they just kind of assume that like, oh yeah, it's fine. Right. But the reality is like people still have to be contributing, still have to be maintaining and all that, even when it's no longer exciting. One other thing I want to call out the Kubernetes community. I mentioned this on Twitter as well, but like one of the things I love about the Kubernetes community is the fact that they take the time to highlight that, unglamorous work that gets done. They have the phrase, you know, chop wood and carry water, which I learned from Joe Beta from Heptio and Brian Lyles also from Heptio, that actually came from Sarah Novotny, who was at Microsoft, I believe, and now is somewhere else. I don't know where, I apologize, but, it just to highlight that, you know, like the work that has to be done in open source isn't always glamorous and, you know, whatever. Sometimes it's just doing the necessary things that the community needs. And so I do want to, you know, just shout out to the community for taking the time to recognize that, because I think a lot of times that goes unrecognized.
Absolutely. Shout out to the community. It is a tough, you know, place to be a maintainer and not always glamorous, as you say. So thank you as well, I guess.
I know. And like most of these people are not doing this as part of their day job, right? It's after hours. After you get done with your day job, this is when you're spending this time. So yeah, thank you.
When everybody does their best work.
Yeah.
Or even if you are doing it as your day job, which is fine, right? There are lots of paid maintainers. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not... My experience has been that generally they're doing it because they're passionate about what you're trying to accomplish with the project. And so it's not just a day job.
Right? Yep,
exactly. You know, and so it ends up being something more than that. And I guess that's what drives a lot of their commitment and you know, kind of going above and beyond.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears a little bit. We've been here since Sunday and we've been asking everybody what they've been up to throughout the week in Detroit. And I've been here a couple times myself, although it seems like everyone we ask or everyone we talk to has rolled through Buddy's Pizza.
Yep.
So I know Detroit Pizza is a big topic. Have you had it? What's your favorite thing you've done so far?
Right. So I have had pizza here in Detroit, but not from Buddy's.
Okay.
Ooh. So I haven't rolled through Buddy's. Now, I got late approval to attend the show. And when I went to, you know, where I make all the travel arrangements, all the hotel blocks downtown were just sold.
Absolutely.
I mean, yep. Yeah, I'm in exorbitantly expensive or, you know, something just crazy stupid. So I ended up finding an Airbnb, which is a couple miles east of the downtown area.
Yeah.
Now I'll be frank. It's not the, you know, most wonderful of neighborhoods.
Washington Ave?
No, Jefferson.
Okay.
Jefferson.
Got it.
So it's like a straight shot down to the conference center, but it's still, you know, like a little older neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
And, but that being said, there is a fantastic, like locally owned, pizza shop right around the corner called Happy's Pizza.
Okay.
Happy's Pizza. Right. And I went in there, I got into town on Sunday, and, it's a little bit of a food desert kind of around the Airbnb where I am. Like there's just not much there, but I found Happy's Pizza and I walked over there and the owner's in there and he's like, you know, hey, how's it going? And I'm good. You know? And he saw that I had been to the grocery store and picked up some, pop as he called it.
Okay.
You know, and so I ordered a pizza. He's like, oh, you can have some pizza and pop. And I'm like, yeah, man, you know,
sounds like a good night.
It is, right? But, you know, it's always a little bit of a risk when you go into,
you know, never know.
You just never know. Right. Rolling the dice. But no, it was really good. Thin crust pizza. Really enjoyed it. So,
nice.
Buddies and Happy's.
Shout out to Happy's Pizza on East Jefferson.
Buddies and Happy's. Happy's with Happy. I think I've been really impressed. I know, you know, I come down sort of from the East as well into the conference center every day through Uber because I booked really late as well. But just sort of all the construction and all the money and the old sort of train station that Ford has taken over. And I think one of the Uber drivers told me they're putting like $1 billion into that area. And it's beautiful. So it's really nice to see. I think this is a pretty unique city, a lot of brick, a lot of architecture that has surprised me. I've spent a couple of times here, but not as much time downtown.
So. And Ryan has had like the most interesting Uber rides this week. So.
I have, yeah, I know. I had one Uber driver basically go like 25 minutes north when my
oops.
Yeah. And they were like, why? They said, why is it telling me to turn? I'm like, because that's the direction we're supposed to go. But neither here nor there. Scott, I really appreciate you stopping by and telling us about what's going on at KubeCon and we have, you know, thanks for being on the show previously. And
yeah, of course. And appreciate the opportunity to jump on and shoot the breeze with you all and talk about KubeCon. So anytime, happy to join again sometime in the future, if you like.
Thanks.
Bhavin, so we have spent the last few days interviewing a bunch of people in the Kubernetes community. I think it's been a really wonderful treat to be in person with everybody and ask them about their experience here at KubeCon. I know I missed Valencia.
Me too.
Yeah, you too. So, and before that, right, we had everything going on with the pandemic. You were in LA, but it's, you know, tell us about the energy difference between LA and here.
Oh, like there is maybe 50%. This is better because LA, we had maybe 4,000 people. Half of them were just vendors talking to each other.
Okay.
We didn't have as many users at KubeCon LA.
Yeah.
This year, things have definitely improved. Like there's more excitement, more people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Lots of fun conversations, a lot of announcements. So this was way better. And I'm glad that we are moving in the right direction again. I know pandemic put a pause on things and things are not headed in the right direction, but now I'm excited for Amsterdam.
Yeah, I've had a number of different conversations, I think, with people about sort of what their take on Kubernetes is, not just on the show, but just like around the show floor. I think the hallway track has been very high quality. I mean, we both work at companies that have booths here, but and we're at the booths every day talking about things. But I think what we've really noticed is sort of everything outside those booth conversations have been about excited about getting back together with everybody about working as a community to take Kubernetes to the next level. And it's been really rewarding. So, you know, give us a little bit of a recap about all the guests maybe we have on the show, your take on some of the things we talked about maybe, and anything you want to talk about?
Sure. I think we started the week right by doing the DOK panel, right? I know we spoke about that in the intro, but then just extending that focus by talking to guys from Percona and talking to Gabriel again from Enterprise DB, just following that theme about running databases and running stateful applications on Kubernetes. Percona definitely had improvements to their operators. I know Gabriel spoke about how Cloud Native PG now supports Postgres 15 and now can do the, what did he call it? Not merge, but the thaw and freeze for database operations. Yep. So that was really cool.
Merge was also new though, I think.
Yes. Yeah. The merge was new in Postgres 15. Cloud Native PG had the thaw feature in it. I think I liked the conversation with Brad earlier today, where he spoke about how they have a new early access program for that multi-cluster setup. I know that's a thing that database vendors are adding. I remember when we spoke to Patrick from DataStax,
a few months back, he said Kate Sandra already has something similar for Cassandra as well. So I see a lot of progress moving towards that highly available geo-redundant architectures in terms of databases. But yeah, let's cover the other vendors as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm going to take a little different tactic about talking about everyone mm-hmm. that we met with this week and focus on sort of the overarching themes.
Yeah.
Is that I feel like we interviewed a bunch of people from different companies that really represent a sort of a wide range of what's going on here today, right?
Yep.
I've had a lot of conversations this week about, you know, how there's a lot of security focus. Mm-hmm. And we talked to Teleport earlier today and what they're up to. And then we have still a large focus on data and Kubernetes, right? This is near and dear to our hearts, but that's still a big, I think, problem that we're tackling.
Yep.
And then I think we also noticed that we're really graduating from the sort of experimental phase to really people pushing this and really adopting it. And that's really, I think, where I'm seeing a large focus on user experience,
yep. right?
Whether that is in educational platforms, like we mm-hmm. talked about Instruct, or what Scott was talking about, and even Brad, right? About, you know, make a complex thing actually seem more simple,
yep.
right? The developer wants that experience of, hey, I want to write a few YAML, throw it at my operator. And this complexity is sort of wrapped up in, you know, think about multi-cluster replication of any data, mm-hmm. right? Any database, any data.
Doing it on a distributed architecture.
Yeah, yeah. That's a huge problem, right? In a traditional IT world. And to say that you can kind of install these things via operator, throw some stuff on there and things just work. I like that focus
yep.
from everyone we've talked to on sort of what they're doing, what they're contributing back to. So, you know, that's, I think, where I'll leave it. Also, we talked to a lot of people that went to Buddy's. If you are in Detroit, check out Buddy's. It is very good. And Happy Pizza.
Yeah, Happy's is good.
Happy's. I didn't go personally, mm-hmm. But it is a wonderful city and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I think we can publish this episode not just as a live from KubeCon, but also a Detroit travel show.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. So for those listening, we'll put as many links that we can in our show notes that represent everyone who we talked to, what they're up to, what they talked about,
yep.
as much as we can remember. And if we forgot something, just, you know, get a hold of us and we'll reach back out to you. But I think that brings us to the end of today's episode.
I know, end of KubeCon.
All right, I'm Ryan.
I'm Bhavin.
And thanks for joining another episode of Kubernetes Bytes.
Thank you for listening to the Kubernetes Bytes podcast.